Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, it's G. Before we start this podcast, I want to warn you that this episode contains some very difficult themes, including discussion about depression and suicidal thoughts. If you feel uncomfortable hearing about any of those subjects, please press stop now and listen to another episode. Remember, if you need to speak to someone, the Samaritans offer support 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Visit samaritans.org for more information.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest is a former Big Brother housemate. I just remember those times with such fondness of watching it. She is the host of the podcast Maybe Baby and the host, the woman in charge of Drive Time on Virgin Radio. She's also mum to a little girl, a little one-year-old called Noah. It's Kate Lawler. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. And thank you for looking after the radio show while I was on maternity leave.
I absolutely love that. I've got to say, I loved how Virgin did it. So for those who don't know, there was a collection of women who basically came together and took little stints of hosting Drive Time.
It was really great that they did that. I liked the fact that it was all women, and I liked the fact that they gave all the women flexibility on when they wanted to do the shifts as well.
So let's talk about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Beckenham in Kent. It's borderline Southeast London, borderline Kent, because it's not proper Canterbury, Dover, Kent, but it's on the border of like Penge, Crystal Palace.
Yeah, it feels more London than Kent.
Yeah. It's Greater London. Yeah. If you look at the map, it's Greater London. But the postcode is like Beckenham, Kent. So Beckenham is a little town near Bromley. A lot of people might know Bromley. And yeah, I grew up there. My mum and dad moved into the house that I grew up in. Literally, my mum went into hospital to have my twin sister and I. Yeah. And when she went into hospital, they were living in a maisonette in Sydenham with my big sister, Kelly. And then when she came out of hospital, she moved into the house. Yeah, my dad had moved in and sort of started to decorate it. And they're still living there now. And that's
the house. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And you're a twin as well.
I'm a twin. Yeah, I've got a twin sister called Karen. We are fraternal twins. We are non-identical.
Right.
So we're about as similar as me and my brother, and, you know, genetically. Like, we haven't got, you know, and we don't look anything alike either. She's super tall. At school, she went through puberty like 4 years before me. So she had these big boobs, and I just was so flat chested. And we always said that she got the boobs and I got the bum. But we are completely different in our, like, in what we like. Our personalities and our mannerisms are the same.
Yeah.
But she wanted kids from a very young age. She's got two boys. They're like 13 and 8 now.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, she's done it. And she always wanted to be a mum.
Yeah.
Whereas I was like, oh God, no, can't think of anything worse. And I used to, you know, you do the kids. I'm not going to do that. I watched her give birth as well, actually. That was
really
pretty horrific. Yeah. She, with her first, and I remember being in the hospital watching. I was head end. I was like, I'm not going to go down there and look. But then I did, because he was stuck and he was almost going to have to be like pulled out with the ventouse. And and in the end, is it the forceps? They just had to cut her, and I watched that. Maybe that's why I had such a huge fear of childbirth, because I watched that and was like, if that's what happens to my vagina, I'm definitely not going there. So,
well, had you already in your head at that point kind of thought, I don't want kids.
Yeah.
And that kind of cemented the deal for you.
cemented my decision.
Well, you spoke about, so when you started recording Maybe Baby, you spoke a lot about the fact that actually having children is a choice. Mm. And so often women are, it's kind of like the leading thing. So when are you going to have kids? Mm. When are you going to do this? What about the if? Like, what about, I might not want them.
Of course. I think times are changing now.
Yeah.
But there is just such a common, I don't know, like presumption that everybody will have children.
Yeah.
And more often than not, women are on fertility journeys. So it's an awkward question to be asked. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they just don't actually want them. And I remember before I had Noah, and I was firmly on the, this was before I even started thinking about it, firmly on the child-free, happily child-free fence. I remember somebody saying, why don't you want children? And I just turned around and said, why do you want children?
Yeah.
I mean, now I obviously had Noah and I love her to pieces, and I can see why people have children. But before, I was like, what a rude question, like to ask me why. Like, I don't need to justify my reason. It's not for me.
Yeah.
And I also think that conversations around how, you know, parenthood can really be, which is why I guess I'm so brutally honest at times, are really important. I think it's more harmful not to have conversations about how hard it can be, so that women and men can really think about whether they want to have children and whether they're equipped to have children.
Yeah.
Because I've really struggled. And
yeah,
if I've struggled, I know there'll be other people that have struggled and maybe thought to themselves, wow, if I'd have known it was going to be like this, or if I'd have known it would be this expensive, or if I'd have known it would be this time consuming or mentally draining, physically exhausting, perhaps I wouldn't have, you know. Mm. But like, more often than not, we are told it's the most amazing thing ever and it completes you and all that.
But there's so much else around that. You know, I think for a long time, like you're saying, all we were told was that it was the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
But actually that amazingness happens in those split seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, it's those you're things so right. that kind of you grasp onto because that's a great moment. Mm-hmm. And actually there's so much mess that happens around that, that, you know, you're completely alone for as well. You know, you have to deal with that. You have to sort that situation out.
Yeah, there's 24 hours in a day, and one little smiling shot on Instagram doesn't, honestly,
paint the whole picture.
It does not paint that. It's a highlights reel and it doesn't paint the whole picture. A lot of people have said to me in the past, but you don't know real love until you've had a child, and that's what we're here for, and it's such a fulfilling thing to have a baby, and you, it completes you, it gives you a purpose. And I honestly couldn't disagree with that more. Like, definitely, yeah, I can see why those people were saying those things, because they clearly did believe them. But I was living such a fulfilled and happy life before Noah came along, and I didn't feel like I needed a purpose. I thought my purpose in life was, you know, just to be mum to Baxter and Shirley, and to be a good partner to Bodge, and be a good daughter to my parents, and go out into the world and win Big Brother, and I don't know, just do whatever I'm doing now. I never once thought to myself, you know, there's a reason I've been put on planet Earth. I know I've got a vagina, and I know I have boobs, and I've got all the parts inside me that can physically have a biologically make a baby, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I will want one, you know?
Yeah. And, well, when you met Bodge, was that a conversation that came up quite quickly?
Yeah, on our first date, he thought I was nuts. He was like, we literally just, you know, we're just sitting here having a cocktail, like, calm down. Because I was like, I just want to lay my cards on the table, bud. This is just a bit of fun. You know, I'm not interested in kids or marriage. And he was like, whoa. I mean, I thought this was just a bit of fun as well. I was like, I just thought it's important to tell you that marriage and kids is not for me, but we'll have fun. And I've just come out of a really long-term relationship, so this is just fun. And for a while, it was just that. He lived in London, I lived in Manchester. We did long distance for 2 years, and it was great. It actually was what I needed, long distance, after the relationship that I'd had, which was very intense. And
I guess with that, you get your own independence as well.
Yeah.
So you've got that person that you can call, but also, you know.
Yeah.
And your time together is more precious, I think, when it's long distance.
It definitely was, you know. We had, like, so many lovely weekends in Manchester or London where we hadn't seen each other for 2 or 3 weeks because of work or whatever. So yeah, it forced us to do that. But then that conversation at the beginning, at the very first date, over the years, and it was a good 7 to 8 years of awkward and uncomfortable conversations every time a new year rolled around, because I'd always say to him, ask me next year, I'll be ready next year. I'm sure.
Would he ask you and you say that? Or would you just put it out there?
He'd give it a week. Yeah, he'd give it a week after New Year, because New Year's Eve we'd get totally trashed and then there'd be a huge come down. So he'd give it a couple of weeks so that I wouldn't be in a really dark, you know, dark period. He'd be like, right, give it a few weeks. And then, like, mid-January, around his birthday, he'd say, so what, you know, you were saying, he'd always do it. He'd be like, so what about now? What about this year then? New year, new horizons, new little member of our family. And I'd say, what, another dog? Yeah, okay, go on then, we'll have another dog. And we'd end up adopting Shirley. But he would always ask for some hope. And that in turn then made me feel terribly guilty, because but then I also felt like, hang on a second, I did lay my cards out on the table. Yeah. But then he was like, but that was, we'd only just met. He was like, you know, when you've been with somebody for a long time and you're in love with them, surely that's the next step. And I was like, well, yes, that's what society tells us, that you meet somebody, you get married and you have children. But
yeah,
I'm not conforming to what society tells me to do. I just want to do what I want to do. I've got to do what makes me happy. But yeah, then I wanted to do what makes him happy as well, because I love him and I knew he'd be a great dad. And I guess I used to say to my friends, if I'm ever going to have kids, it's going to be with him, because he's just everything that I would want my partner to be if I would have a child with them. So maybe, you know, it was just me meeting the right person. That was what all it was, you know, for so many years. And I finally did. But yeah, those uncomfortable conversations, they turned into arguments sometimes.
Yeah, there must have been a real bone of contention between you.
There really was, yeah. And I used to think, he's going to leave me because he really wants to have children. And he used to say, I'm not going to leave you. And when he proposed to me, we weren't even, you know, he proposed to me at a time when, you know, it still was very much, I wasn't even on the fence. I was in the child-free and happy camp. And he proposed to me and I said, are you, so you're asking me to marry you? And then I started thinking, are you asking me to marry you because you think by doing this, I'll have your baby? Or are you asking me to marry you because you love me no matter what? And he was like, I can't believe you're even asking me that. Like, of course I love you no matter what. That's why I'm asking you. And I want to marry you regardless of whether we have children or not. And yeah, I'd like to think that he would still, you know, stick to his word. But who knows, like 10 years down the line, he
also might... Also, I love the fact that he's just proposed to you, and rather than saying a yes or a no, it's a conversation.
Stop it. Stop
Let's
it.
Debate this a little. Can we just clarify a few points before I say yes?
He's holding the ring like, you know, you're really killing the vibe. You're ruining this romantic moment for everyone. Do you know what? I'm just going to take the ring back. Screw you, Kate.
But you are such a talker, though, and you're a thinker. So, you know, your brain will be firing off all these things. And I think it's so great that you vocalise that, because so many women will be feeling these things and not put it out there.
Mm. Even though I didn't want children, after about 7 years, I said, you know, we're in a unique position here where I don't want children and you do. More often than not, it's the other way around. But we did the podcast because we wanted to just kind of really get a true insight and speak to people in depth about what their experience of parenthood was like. And after every episode with a parent, I'd come away thinking, actually, it sounds all right. It sounds fun. Because everyone would be going, it's great, you got to do it, Kate. And then I turned 40 and that really hit something. It struck a chord.
Really?
Honestly, overnight, I was just in my 30s because my 20s were hedonistic. They were wild. I was going out, I was having all the fun. And then in my 30s, I felt like I just wanted to relax a little bit more. And it was more like I'd have the odd glass of wine on a Sunday down the pub with my roast dinner. And then I got Baxter and I was a dog mum and I really enjoyed still working, still focusing on my career. But then I don't know why, but as soon as I hit 40, I said, well, what's this decade got for me? Like, what do I do in this decade? I looked at it very much like 20s were wild, 30s were finding the man of my dreams and settling down. And what does, I don't know, it just really, it made me think a lot overnight.
Also, I guess at 40, you know that window of possibility, it is close. So at some point, that choice is no longer going to be a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, you have then, that's final at some point.
We run out of eggs eventually, but if they were infinite, I wonder how long I would have put it off for. Probably been having a baby in my 60s. No, I wouldn't have waited that long. But it's interesting. I already knew that my time was running out because we'd been to a fertility clinic for a health check. And while Bodge's sperm was, you know, he was proper puffed up chest at that point, she said, well done, your sperm are good. They're swimming in the right direction. They're very fast. He was like, great. Such a bloke about it. I was told that my ultrasound scan was fine. Everything was normal. But my blood test, the AMH blood test, came back with it basically indicated that I would go through the menopause early, that I might go through the menopause early, and that my egg count was very low for my age, like in the bottom 5%. So I didn't have a lot of time left. And I knew that in 2019. We were told that in 2019, while we did series one of Maybe Baby. And even hearing that, it was a shock because I realised, like you said, it would no longer be a choice. It wouldn't be my decision to make. Mm-hmm. One day, very soon, I won't be able to have children, and that's that. And, you know, the woman was really lovely, Mari Wren, at the Lister Fertility Clinic. She said, when are you getting married? And we said, June 2020. And she said, we're going to start trying. We're going to start trying after that. And she said, well, would it be the worst thing to walk down the aisle pregnant? I think she really wanted me to get on with it. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, do you know what? I don't want to be pregnant on my wedding day, babe. I want to get drunk. I want to have fun. And she was like, just don't put it on the back burner for too long. So the plan was to start trying after we got married in June 2020. But we were like, yeah, we're going to try on our honeymoon. And then COVID bloody hit and our wedding got cancelled. And I was like, oh my word, we've got to wait another year. And then he was like, well, shall we wait another year? Or should we just, instead of getting married, should we just try for a baby? And so that was like, oh my goodness, this whole baby thing is just, it was crazy. And I literally, by the middle of May, like literally 2 weeks after my 40th, we decided that we were going to try for a baby instead of getting married and get married in 2021 instead, which we never ended up doing because COVID was still around. Thank goodness, because I just wouldn't, but now I wasn't in any fit state to do it. But we decided, literally, it was like, it was a week of intense 2 week conversations. We were like, are we doing this? Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it.
And did it all happen quite quickly?
Yeah. We were very fortunate. I mean,
after worrying as well about how long it's going to take, is it going to happen?
I know. The thing is, I was using Glow, the ovulation tracker, so you know when you're ovulating. I was using it for years to not get pregnant because I wasn't on the pill. So I was using it. I was like, I'm ovulating here. And there would be, I was like a couple of days where it was really safe to have unprotected sex. I was like, come on, this, you know, it's safe now. So I knew when I was ovulating for years. So it was like I kind of, and also I got a pain when I ovulated, which actually is quite good if you're trying because then you know. Yeah. So I said to him, like, the end of May is when I'm next ovulating. We had the conversations in May and I said, at the end of May, I will be ovulating. Let's try then. And I remember us trying when my app said I was most fertile. But the next evening, I started to get the pain and I was like, we're going to have to go again, bud, because tonight's the night. And so I knew it was one of those days. But I immediately felt after that weekend that I don't know why. I just felt like it had worked. Yeah. I was like, I just got to have this feeling that you've impregnated me. I really do, especially because we did it twice and it was when I was ovulating and I got the pain and I knew my cycle so well from those years of tracking it. I just knew. So I found out really early on that I was pregnant.
How did that feel?
I was over the moon. I was so happy. And I never thought seeing a positive pregnancy test would bring me so much joy. And I immediately felt maternal, which I'd never... You know, everyone says I was so maternal with the dogs, but like it's a different kind of maternal feeling when you know that there's a baby inside you. Mm. And I was straight away completely in love with what it was. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so happy that we've done it and we've made it work. And now it's just the next 9 months that we have to get through. Like, who knows if it will, you know, be a viable pregnancy? Who knows if I'll be okay? Who knows what the pregnancy will be like? Who knows what the birth is going to be like? I was always worried about every aspect.
That's the thing, isn't it? You get a positive test and there's that moment of elation. And I kind of feel like there's nothing to describe. There's nothing quite like seeing that positive, I think. It's a very odd feeling, whether you are expecting it or not, I would say. But yeah, there's just nothing quite like it. Then all of a sudden, all this uncertainty and doubt and panic just starts creeping in at you.
Did you?
Absolutely. Well, because I had a miscarriage before I had Buzz for my first pregnancy, actually. So each pregnancy after that was I was just aware. I think the innocence of pregnancy by that point had disappeared. Mm. I just knew that actually this is just the start, that word pregnant, and actually there's other hurdles to overcome.
Yeah, so many. And I was really fortunate actually to have a very good pregnancy. I was overwhelmingly healthy and I enjoyed it and I really embraced my body changing and I was fascinated with what happened to me, like physically, because you hear about, you know, morning sickness and stuff, but like I had like veins coming up on my eyelids and my areolas were huge. Bodge's nickname for me was Big Discs because he basically thought my areola looked like mini discs. And just, it's crazy, isn't it? What happens to you?
Like, well, you think like things like that are so fascinating because it's literally, it connects you to your baby straight away because you know, it helps them find your boob when it's time for them to feed. You know, it's like your body is already thinking ahead to the baby actually being in the room.
Yeah. It's just remarkable what happens to your body during pregnancy and everything that happens afterwards, like how your body changes as well once you've given birth and it just recovers and goes back to, I mean, it never goes back to what it was. For some women it does. They're very lucky. But I was looking at my scar the other day because I had an abdominal birth and I was thinking, how on earth did they pull her out of that? That is the tiniest little incision. I mean, but you forget how small they were at one point as well because she's huge now. She just had her 1-year checkup at the health visitor and she's in the 98th centile. She's such a chunk. She was the, like, 25th when she was born. And I'm blaming Sue. I'm blaming the mother-in-law because all she does is give her rice cakes with a mountain of cream cheese on. She's every day, I'm like, but every time she takes a bite, she just pours more cream cheese. I'm like, Sue, enough cream cheese already. No wonder she's so big.
So did you know you were going in for a C-section?
I did, yes. So I'd spent many years not wanting children and also having a huge fear of childbirth.
Having been there with your sister.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. And I went to my GP before we started trying and said, look, I'm really scared of trying for a baby because I'm terrified of childbirth. The thought of pushing something out of my tuppence breaks me out in a cold sweat. Like, I fear that I'm going to die or that my baby's going to die or we're both going to die. I fear like it's all going to go wrong and I'll have to end up having emergency C-section like my mum did with her first. And I'm built like my mum. Her pelvis was too small. So it was real. There was real complications there. So that's why she ended up having an emergency C-section with Kelly, my big sister. And I just had this huge fear of childbirth. And the GP said, look, you are allowed to ask for an elective C-section if you really want one. And yeah. You can chat to an obstetrician. They can go through everything with you. And so I did that. And I had like quite a few conversations with obstetricians before I tried for a baby and then when I was pregnant, and then we decided, yeah, that a C-section would be the best decision. And I nearly had a C-section anyway because my placenta was really high.
Uh-huh.
Or is it low? I can't remember which way it goes.
Low. So was it covering?
That's
the,
it. Yeah. So then they said you might have to have one anyway, but it moved up in the end. And right. So they said, you know, it's your choice, but given that you have a fear of childbirth and that you really want to go for the elective C-section, let's do it. And I think it's really important that I just feel grateful that, you know, we live somewhere where we can have that choice and we can have the birth we want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was it like when you met Noah? Did you know she was going to be a girl?
I did. Yeah. Right. From the very first scan we had, actually, I opted for that blood test, which I couldn't wait. And I was convinced I was having a boy because both my sisters had two boys and my little brother had a girl. And I was like, well, I'll have a boy because all the girls have had boys and my brother's had a little girl. And so, yeah, when she told me I was having a girl, I was really surprised. And I'd also convinced Bod she was having a son. I was like, you know it's going to be a boy, don't you? So he was like, oh, it's a girl. Oh. And I was like, are you disappointed? And he was like, no. And I just really thought I was having his son. So I knew it was a girl. And when she came out, it was just, wow. Just, I mean, the one downside of having the C-section was that the screen is so high up, right below my boobs. So she was placed in a position that felt like I was holding a telephone. So she was up. So I went, I can't see her. What does she look like? I can't see her. She was on me straight away for skin on skin. But I was like, I really want to be able to see her and I just can't because of the screen. And Bodge was like, she looks like a cabbage. And I always remember her saying that. And she was a little bit of a mess when she came out, like all babies are. But I just, oh, the love. Yeah, it was a magical feeling. And I just didn't want to
hit you straight away.
Oh, straight away. Yeah, I was completely in love and crying my eyes out. And it's the first time I think I'd seen Bod cry in years. We were both over the moon that she was there and she was healthy. And it had just gone really well. You know, they were sewing me back up and we had the playlist on and she was on me making these little noises. And straight away, I was like, I love you so much. And I never wanted to lose her. So, yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
And what was it like bringing her home?
Well, we'd had quite... it wasn't a straightforward birth.
Oh, no, it wasn't,
bringing
was
her
it?
Home. Yeah, we had quite a tough... We were literally wheeled into the recovery room and I started to breastfeed straight away, which was wonderful. And I thought everything was okay until the midwife came over and said, I'm not quite happy with those noises she's making because she sounds like she's singing. And sometimes when babies are born via a C-section, the fluid isn't drained properly from their lungs where they're not pushed out of the you know, birth canal. So I just want to check with somebody else, get a second opinion. And then they decided they were going to take her to intensive care, which was just a real shock because she was on me and she was feeding and I thought everything was okay. So she was taken away about 2 hours after I'd given birth, an hour after I'd given birth. And I went back up to the postnatal ward with no baby and she was in intensive care and I was just like, oh, bummer. This is not how I expected it to be. And I knew, I felt like she wasn't in grave danger. Like I knew it was probably going to be okay. But when they're in your baby is in intensive care, you can't help but worry. And it's obviously like you have them inside you for so long. You think as soon as you give birth, they're going to be on you and you're just going to be on the ward. And all the other mums were there with their babies. And I was just like, oh, I just want to know that she's okay. And I couldn't even go and see her because I couldn't get out of bed because I'd had...
Yeah, because you've had your C-section.
And I had the catheter in. And so Bodge was with her. So then I was on my own and I wanted him to go with her. But then I just felt deeply lonely and I was thinking to myself, I want Bodge here, but I wanted him there with her, you know?
Yeah.
And so she was in intensive care for a couple of days. And then after coming out of intensive care, we had to stay in hospital for two more days because she lost so much weight.
Right.
I mean, they all lose a bit of their birth weight, but she'd gone over the percentage that was healthy. So they said, like, you've got to stay in hospital until she can gain some more weight. Otherwise, if you go home now and you have a visit from the health visitor tomorrow and she hasn't put on enough weight, you'll have to come back, but via A&E.
Right.
And I just thought to myself, I don't know if I want to do that.
So by this point, had you been discharged?
No.
Or did they keep you
in
as well?
They kept me in because Noah was in intensive care and I was breastfeeding. So I was on call. So I was in my bed and then I was allowed to go and visit her. I wasn't allowed to stay with her all the time. But when she was needed feeding, they would call me and I'd go and feed her and then come back. It was only for a couple of days. And then I was moved to my own room with her rather than be on a ward I was moved to a room when I didn't have her because this midwife said to me, look, you may as well not be on this ward because you can get some sleep in a room. Noah's in intensive care. You're not going to get any sleep on this ward with all the babies and the mum. So I was moved to the room, private room, which was lovely because I got some sleep. I got some sleep the first night-ish. I went back to feed her a couple of times. But after the second day of her being in the hospital, in intensive care, she was moved sort of from the real intensive care. I can't remember what it's called now. The name escapes me. But it was like from NICU to like... the ward where there is still intensive care, but it's less serious.
Okay.
So she was there for a day. So it was one day in intensive care, one day in there, and then 2 days back in the room with me while she put on weight. And then we were told to stay in hospital for one more day just because she still hadn't put on weight, but we wanted to go home. So we just chanced it. And they said, you'll have a visit tomorrow from the health visitor. And if she hasn't put on enough weight, you will have to come back again.
Really?
So I just fed and fed and fed. And thankfully she'd put on enough weight that we were able to stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
So when we finally got home, it was a bit like, thank goodness, it's been 5 days in hospital. I was so happy to get in my own bed. And, you know, Bodge had been trying to sleep on this uncomfortable red leather chair in the room. And I just wanted, you know, I wanted to see the dogs. I wanted some like nice food that wasn't hospital food. We ordered like Five Guys, I think. And we had like a vegan burger and French fries with mayo and ketchup. And it was just nice to sit on the sofa and just look at her in our arms and just, you know, start the journey of what, you know, of her being at home with us. So,
and also, I guess if she'd been in intensive care and had all that, those other people having their input, it's quite nice to just kind of go, and now it's us.
Just us, yeah. Because there was there were so many visits from, you know, in hospital from midwives, you know, coming in. And actually, that was one benefit, I think, from staying in hospital for the 5 days I did, was that I had so much help from midwives with latching and positioning with breastfeeding. And they taught me how to swaddle her properly and it was really nice. It was like a crash course in, you know, breastfeeding and everything like that. But you're right. It was finally just Bodge, myself and Noah. And that first night, it was just so calm and quiet and peaceful. And it was, you know, nice that she wasn't having to have any more antibiotics given to her or, you know, people just coming in and out.
The first 6 weeks for you were quite a ride.
Yeah, I imagine they are with all new mums, right? Like,
well, they are. They absolutely are. I can remember phoning you and you know, and just dropping you texts every now and then just to let you know that I was thinking of you. Because you had to go back in as well because of a nail infection.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll never forget that. Thank you so much. It really meant the world to me to know that you were there. And so, like, so many people reached out on Instagram and all my friends and family were all reaching out to me as well, because I couldn't see anybody because it was lockdown and you could only see people who were part of your bubble. So that meant my family couldn't come over because they already had their bubbles. So it really meant a lot for everybody reaching out on social media. But yeah, we had quite a few A&E visits after we'd brought her home after 5 days. We went back because she had paronychia in the finger. That's quite rare in newborns.
But two of mine have had it, like I said to you. Just, we were back in A&E and on the children's ward, you know.
Yeah, and it's always just when you go into A&E, it's never a nice feeling because you are in, you know, that's where people rush their children when something seriously is wrong with them. And you see so many babies there who are really, really ill. So you're like when I look back now, at the time it was a monumental illness. I was like, she's going to die, she's going to die. And I look back now and I'm so grateful that it wasn't anything too serious. I mean, it could have got serious, but we got there just in time.
Yeah.
And then the next time we went back, they thought she might have sepsis or meningitis. And they had to do the lumbar puncture and they wouldn't let us be there. And they asked us to go and have a walk outside the hospital grounds. And I remember it being just this cold, really freezing cold, like February night, and it was pitch black. And, you know, we were walking around the hospital and I was just like, is she even meant to be here, Bodge? Like, we had the problems when she was born. Then we had to go back. We had to go back because she raised the temperature. She spiked the temperature 4 days after we got back from hospital.
Right.
And we rung 111 and they advised us to go to A&E. In the end, it was okay, but she did spike a temperature. They just told us to keep an eye on her. But then we went back for paronychia. Then we went back and, you know, it was the suspected sepsis or meningitis. And I was just like, what's going on? Like, is something bad going to happen eventually? Is she meant to be taken away from us? Like, I couldn't help but thinking that she might not, I don't know, make it, or it was inevitable that she was going to be taken away from us. I couldn't help but feel that she wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
And Bodge was crying and I was crying. But thankfully, after, you know, staying in hospital for another night, and then she was on the IV antibiotics for a week. So we kept having to go back to hospital every day for 5 days, I think it was, to have the antibiotics administered. So there's just a lot of hospital visits. And I felt like that newborn bubble that everyone talks about, it never happened for us.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it doesn't happen for everybody either.
Yeah.
And it must be amazing when it does. But I was like, you know, half tempted to call my book, What Fucking Newborn Bubble? Because we didn't get it. And I was really gutted because I was hoping that it was going to be that kind of, you know, you give birth and you go home and it's just you three and family visit. But we never got that.
Yeah.
But I have to be grateful, you know, that obviously I'm always thinking to myself how lucky we are that we have a National Health Service who look after our babies and who are so... Just they were there, like every time we went in, they were so lovely and just on it and just looked after Noah so well. And I'm forever grateful for them and grateful that she was always discharged and she was fine. Mm. And we didn't have any serious health complications or illnesses, you know, like so many parents have to deal with.
How were you during that time? Because obviously there is now a huge focus on maternal mental health. And when things like that are going on, you know, it's your emotions are all over the shop.
Yeah, I was probably dealing with it a lot worse than Bodge. I think he was trying to be brave because he saw how broken I was, that we weren't having an easy time of it. And I was having to go with her to the hospital. And, you know, he drove me to the hospital every time I had to go and have the antibiotics. But then because of all the antibiotics she had, she then developed reflux, terrible reflux, like projectile vomiting everywhere. And so that was a really tough experience to deal with, as well as breastfeeding then became an issue. And she had tongue tie as well. And it was all these things. And I think I just presumed that's what it was. I presume that's what parents go through when their babies are so young. They go through all these things because you meet lactation consultants and you meet tongue tie specialists and they're there for a reason. You think, well, you must be dealing with this every day, so other parents must be going through this. But I internalized a lot of my emotions, and I can't say I regret doing that now, because I just did it at the time because I didn't want to feel like I was being dramatic. I felt like I was being dramatic saying that I felt so, I mean, I did feel suicidal, but not until around 6 weeks. But I really thought it was just a case of the baby blues and that it was just, you know, we were just going through a bit of a tough time. But when I had therapy, my therapist kind of spoke to me about processing and, you know, at the point when Noah seemed to be getting better after all the A&E trips, after mm-hmm. we'd started to get the reflux, you know, the reflux was reducing and the breastfeeding, we started to combi feed, which gave me a break and stuff like that. I was able to process a lot more what happened, which is probably why I started to spiral, because I had more time to think about it. Whereas
well, the pressure is almost off there as well. So you're no longer having to function and be the be the mum for everyone, actually, and be the wife, like, be the partner. All of a sudden now the pressure's off and you can actually start to process it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did. And I did spiral and I didn't see enough of my family or friends for them to kind of like talk to me about what I was probably really feeling. And I think if I'd have seen more people, they would have been like, Kate, you need help. Yeah. Whereas I was like, I'm fine. And I didn't want to talk to Bodge about it either, even though he's big on talking, he's big on communication. He wants to talk to me about how I'm feeling. Yeah. But I just felt like I had to be strong. Like I had to do everything myself and be mum to Noah and not be struggling. Because I think because I think with everything I've ever done in my life, I've always taken to most things in life like a duck to water. Like I know that sounds a bit braggy. it sounds a bit braggy, but you know, like if I had a task at home, I'd just be like, right, I can do this. Or if I started a new job, they'd be like, do you need any help? I'd be like, no, I can crack this, I can do it. You know, I always wanted to, you know, training for a marathon, I'd be like, I train for a marathon, I can do this, I can do everything I put my, you know, hand to. But I think with motherhood, I felt like I could do it, but I really couldn't. And I was gutted that I wasn't finding it a breeze, or it didn't come naturally to me. And I wasn't finding breastfeeding, even though I did at the beginning, find it just so wonderful. And I felt so close to her. And I was struggling with that as well, which I think can send you into such turmoil. Because breastfeeding is like, everyone tells you how hard breastfeeding is, but no one told me how hard it is to stop. Even when you should stop, because it's not working. It's really difficult because you feel such a bond with your baby when you're breastfeeding, and the closeness of it. And, you know, it's so, you know, you're nourishing them from you. And it's like, wow, I can't believe I'm giving my baby milk. This is insane. My boobs are providing this food for my child. But then the feelings of resentment, and like, I felt so upset that she didn't want my boobs in that way. Like I was so upset, and I felt rejected, and I felt frustration because she couldn't get the hang of it properly and I couldn't get the hang of it properly. And so that really sent me into a spiral as well. I think that contributed greatly to how I was feeling. And
it's everything. It just all comes together, doesn't it? It's a mashup of everything that comes together to make you feel the way you do. I think also sleep, because at that time you're not sleeping properly. And then, you know, you've got this whole feeling and the reflux as well. There's just, I think it's just layer upon layer upon layer.
I know. And it's the ultimate paradox, isn't it, parenting? Because the day-to-day experience of looking after a newborn is so mundane. It was so mundane for me and monotonous and challenging and exhausting. But then it was the most joyful thing ever, because she would then smile at me for the first time and I would feel like just this rush of endorphins. Like I was so happy when she smiled at me for the first time. And it was like you said, it was that those little moments where you feel so happy. But then most of the time I did feel really, really down and worried that she was losing weight and anxious about, you know, anyone else looking after her while I slept, or, you know, like stressed because the house was a mess. And just, it is just such a complex set of emotions when they're a newborn. And that on top of sleep deprivation is just wild. I was hallucinating most days. I was saying stuff to Bodge. He was like, what? What did you just say? And then I'd say, I don't know. What did I just say? Did I really just say that? And he'd be like, yeah, you did. Just go to sleep. You need to go and have a nap. And I would be like, yeah, okay, I'll go and have a nap. And then I'd lay in bed and I couldn't sleep. So I put a wash on, or I'd go and do, you know.
Because your mind though, because I think when you're a doer as well, you're so used to getting everything done.
Yeah.
So when you see a pile of, you see the laundry baskets full, there's something in us that stops us from kind of going, no, actually, it's okay if all that stuff isn't done. Mm. We're focusing on something else. We've recalibrated in this different way. But actually the other part of your brain has always functioned in that way, refuses to stop.
Yeah, you're so right. When you're a doer, it's so easy. It's so easy to say to a mum to be, just do yourself a favor, sleep when the baby sleeps and don't worry about the mess in the house. It's so easy to say that. But like, if you're a doer and you don't like mess, it's actually, it's worse in a way, because you're laying there and you're like, I can't sleep. This, you know, all the dishes haven't been done. And I, there's, and everyone buys you flowers as well. And you're like, I can barely keep my baby
slowly
alive. How am I supposed to keep all these flowers alive as well? I feel really bad because they're gifts and I should be watering them. But I'm like a baby hanging off my boob and there's laundry to be done. And oh my word, it is just, yeah, it's exhausting. The sleep is just, it's next level tiredness. I can't. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of women who were saying to me when I was pregnant, just wait till the baby comes if you think you sleep. Because I was kept on stories going, I can't blimmin' sleep. This bump is getting ridiculous. And I need a wee all the time. And I keep getting leg cramps in the middle of the night. And I'm sure I'm going to sleep better when the baby's here. And everyone was like, you are a joker. Like, no, you're not. This is good sleep compared to... And I was like, no. And one person messaged me saying, don't let everyone scare you. I actually slept better once the baby came than when I did when I was pregnant. And I hung on to that. I was like, yes, yes, I'm going to sleep better. No, I didn't. Thanks for lulling me into a false sense of security. I definitely didn't. But it does get better. Yeah, and they do end up sleeping.
They do.
But it just takes time. And when you're in the thick of it and you're in the throes of it and you're thinking, I'm never going to be happy again. What have I done? Why did we do this? I knew I'd be a bad mum. I knew I wouldn't cope well. This is why I didn't want a child. And all those horrible feelings are going through your head in those first 6 weeks, 6 to 12 weeks, especially. And someone says to you, just get through the first 6 months. And they mean it. They mean it really well. Just get through the first 6 months. But when you can't even think about getting through the next 6 hours, it's like the worst thing you can hear. You're like, how? How am I supposed to get through?
I can remember someone saying about 2 weeks. And me kind of feeling like, well, that feels like a chunk of time. Like, let's just push through. And actually, it was months. But it was having that little bit of a time frame to know that it wasn't going to be the forever.
Yeah.
To know that things will change and the sun will shine again. And, you know, these feelings that take over. Like those voices in your head that kind of go, nope, no good at this. Shouldn't have done this. Especially at nighttime when, you know, the world is asleep and you are there with a baby who's crying in your face and you've got, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
It literally, for me, it felt like I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah. Oh, God, those night times. Yeah, especially. And you know that the thing is, you have so many people around you, like family and friends. I mean, you might not, but like I had family around me, friends around me. I had, you know, an army of women who were there the moment I opened that Instagram app, you know, saying I'm part of the Wide Awake Club too. But I never felt more alone than those night feeds when I'd be sitting there trying to wind her, because winding takes fucking ages. No one told me how long winding took.
It depends on the baby as well.
The 2-hour cycle. Yeah, yes. I mean, the 2-hour cycle, I thought, oh, I feed them and then I wind her and then it's 2 hours until the next feed. But I'd be feeding her, which would take an hour, and then it would be an hour to wind, and then I'd need to feed her again. Yeah. I was like, how is this?
Exactly.
What? No, it's not a 2-hour cycle. And oh, but you do, your thoughts run away with you at night.
Yeah.
That's when I found myself Googling stuff that I was, you know, that started to scare me. I was thinking to myself, shouldn't be feeling this. And there's no one, you know, I couldn't really talk to Bodge how I was feeling because I was there in the dark on my own in the nursery, you know, trying to wind her, trying to feed her, trying to get her off to sleep. And you do, your thoughts run away with you. And those can be some of the darkest moments, I think, at that time, which is why it's so important to communicate with whoever that may be who's there to support you, like your partner, a friend, a family member, carer, health visitor, GP. You've got to communicate. And I found it so hard to do that.
I think even just hearing like us talk about it, I think if I had heard people talking about those thoughts and those darker times before I was going through it, I think even that would have helped in some way. Mm-hmm. Because when you're going through it and you haven't heard of other people going through it, it feels like you're the only one.
Yeah. I think now about when my mum had a baby and how little information there was out there, apart from, I mean, she would have had books and stuff, but like, and she stayed in hospital for a week after each baby so the midwives could help her. But I look at how connected we are now to resources and how we can find things out at the drop of a hat with the internet and stuff like that. But I remember this woman, Kate, who I fostered a dog and I ended up finding this dog a new home with this lady who I've kept in touch with. She's wonderful. And she messaged me and said, I wish I'd had someone like you talking to me when I was in the newborn days, because I felt exactly the same as you, but I felt like I couldn't ever tell anyone how I was feeling because I felt guilty. And I think, you know, even though I am brutally honest about how hard it was in the beginning and how much I had feelings of regret and anxiety and, you know, like I just felt awful. But like, I just think how lucky we are to be able to help people now via Instagram, social media and stuff like that. Even, you know, we're more connected as friends. We can talk online, which is sometimes a bit easier for people than talking face to face, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, I got a few messages from friends after I was open on Instagram about how difficult I was finding it on stories, saying, oh, I felt like that. One of my best mates said, I felt like that with my first. And I said to her, you didn't tell me that. And she said, well, it's because all the other girls in our group were kind of nailing it and didn't say they felt like that. So I felt like I couldn't really be honest about how I was feeling. But she felt like she could be honest with me, which was something. But, you know, I wish not everybody felt so guilty about it. But you do. There's huge, you know, mum guilt every aspect of the way, from the moment you fall pregnant to the moment your child, I mean, forever, right? It never ends. But I just think, back to, you know, times where women didn't have that kind of, like, you know, I was on Peanut the other day, that app. You know, I think that's great that you can connect. And I was just looking at some women in my area saying, I really would love to meet women in my area for advice. These are women that might not even have a partner or family nearby. And that's what's great about that app. Yeah. Not an ad, not a spawn, by the way. I just genuinely like it. Yeah.
And well, because I think before COVID, lots of people would meet through NCT classes. Yeah. Whereas now, you know, I'm sure those are still going on, but people are a bit more hesitant in doing it. And I think when there are things like that, in the absence of baby clubs and things, or people might not feel comfortable going to baby clubs, I think something like Peanut is great for connecting parents.
But and so we're lucky in a way that we, you know, live in a world where we are more connected. But at the same time, it shouldn't make you think, oh, well, I feel bad for feeling like that, because I do have so many people around me. And what everyone says to you so often, everything is a phase.
Yeah.
And you know, you'll be like high-fiving your partner going, we had a good night's sleep last night, we've cracked this. And then the next night, you'll be up all night. So you just got to take the small wins.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you could write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to and what would you say?
Well, I guess a book in many ways is a letter all the mums out there who have been through it or who are pregnant and who might go through it. Sometimes I think people might accused me of scaring women, because it's not, you know, I don't want to say it's all doom and gloom. I just wanted to get it out there that it's a possibility that you might find it hard.
Yeah.
So I guess the book in many ways is a letter to all the mums out there who've been through it. But I probably write a letter to my younger self to say, don't let anyone make you feel bad about the decisions you're making.
Yeah.
Because I think so often we're judged about our decisions and whether or not we are going to start a family or whether we want kids or not, you know. You shouldn't ever be made to feel bad about your life choices. Yeah. And I'd probably write a letter to my younger self just saying, stick to your guns and actually do everything you're going to do and don't question it. Because I'm really glad that I waited this long, because I got everything out of my system. And only now do I realise how full on and time consuming and all encompassing being a mum is. Yeah. And I'm really glad I have my 20s to party and I have my 30s to focus on my career. And now I can really focus on being a mum and taking some more time off work, actually, which I'm about to do. To be with Noah and to just appreciate this time I have with her, because I know I'm never going to do this again, G. Like, I'm definitely done. Like, I don't want any more kids. I really want just to focus on Noah, and I want to enjoy this time I have with her, because I won't ever get these days again with any other child, and I won't get them with her. You know, she's going to go to nursery soon, then she'll go to school, and then she'll flee the nest.
The final three sentences that I would like you to complete. All right, you ready? Being a mum means?
Being a mum means you are blessed, but you rarely get a rest.
Oh, I like that.
I made that rhyme. I think I said that right. Yeah. I do feel blessed, but I rarely get a rest and I'm bloody exhausted all the time. But I feel I feel so blessed that I've been able to have Noah.
Yeah. Since having a child,
I still haven't got around to cleaning the skylight windows in the loft bedroom that I've been meaning to do since September 2019, when we moved into this house.
And I'm happy when?
Oh, I'm happy when Noah wakes up. Honestly, you want them to sleep, but you miss them when they're asleep.
Yeah.
And honestly, when I walk into our nursery first thing in the morning and she sees me, she's so happy to see me. And she's so happy to show me everything on her wall. And I love her so much. And, you know, I've got some hate before saying, oh, she doesn't love her kid. She's always moaning about her kid. I'm just being honest. But that make no mistake, I love her to pieces. She is my world. And I'm happy when I see her. And actually, I'll tell you when I'm happy as well. Every morning, we've got a little routine. Sorry to ramble. But I go downstairs, I make her a bottle, I make Bodger coffee and I make myself a coffee. And I bring our hot drinks up and we bring her into the bed and we sit her in between us and we all have our hot drinks and Baxter and Shirley are on the bed. And I just love that 10 minutes of calm before the day begins when we're all having our little drinks and she's got hair everywhere, scarecrow hair we call her. And I love that time of day where we're just all waking up together.
I
really appreciate, especially now, I appreciate it more than ever to have them here and to have a roof over our heads. And have our freedom.
Kate, thank you so much.
Thank you, G. Thanks for always being there. You're a star. I love the podcast. Thank you for having me on it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Happy Mum, Happy Baby is produced by Pixiu Productions Limited and is part of the Acast Creator Network. Happy Mum, Happy Baby listeners, isn't our community just wonderful? I can't wait for us all to meet in actual real life for our first ever get-together. This 8th and 9th of July, we are heading to Old Billingsgate, the most beautiful venue in London, for a weekend of chats, laughs, live podcasts, experts, retail therapy, and a little bit of pampering too. Book onto the workshops and sessions or simply stroll around and explore all the areas on offer. I'm going to be doing just that. Head to happymumhappybaby.com where you can find all the info and get your tickets. And whilst you're on the website, have you noticed there's new pictures of me wearing some rather lovely hoodies and t-shirts? Yes, that's right. Happy Mum, Happy Baby clothing is here. We launched today, so you might even be the first to see it. Hurrah! Now, I love me a quote. I love a t-shirt quote, so I wanted to bring some of those quotes that really show how we feel. So my favourite is flipping shattered, because yes, I am feeling flipping shattered the majority of the time. And my second favourite is the Grow Love jumper in sizes for adults and mini-me's too. Hurrah! Big love from me, G.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.